two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Innovation and Leadership. I'm Jess Larson. This is part two of our interview with Stephen Drake.
I guess as a skier, and this goes to the roots of the mission again, you know, personally, I just was obsessed with like how I could further my own craft and ski, you know, not necessarily to, you know, to get a claim or some accolade or something. It's just really a very personal mission about like developing the art of.
So Stephen, DPS Skis, DPSskis.com, right? You guys, you know, have essentially like the most premium ski, the best powder backcountry ski, but you still have to get the word out. Can you talk about these videos? And, you know, I think I just saw on Twitter that you guys got accepted to the Banff Film Festival, stuff like that. Can you talk about your approach to getting the word out about having something awesome?
Yeah, it's tough, you know, because we're, even to this day, we're still upstarts in a, you know, in a industry that's had a lot of history and a lot of entrenched players in it. So, and there's a lot of boutique ski builders out there, and, you know, so many of them kind of come and go, and creating a sustainable business model around what we do, especially at our price points, is, you know, it's interesting, and we need to create a brand that's commensurate with the product. And a lot of it's, you know, not like strategic. Is a lot of it, the media aspect of what we do is just natural. You know, when we were kind of in the nascent stages of building skis and designing skis, we're also traveling the world, you know, chasing, you know, that perfect run, the best snow, the best spots. And that's culturally ingrained kind of in the DNA of the company. And, you know, part of that was not only like trying to find perfection in the mountains, but also we also found like a lot of richness in like sharing that experience with our friends and documenting it at a very high level in terms of the quality of the narrative and the images and all that stuff. So cinematic is our like little film arm, and really it wasn't created as like a marketing piece per se, but more sort of a natural expression of our experience in the mountains. And it was, you know, the photographer that basically has grown up with DPS, Oscar Hernandez, a really good friend that's been with us from the beginning, the filmmakers, Ben Sergiulewski, Frank Mikkel, also all good friends that were, you know, like friendships that were fused in the mountains. And yeah, so it's not a marketing program as much as it is just doing what we do normally. But it's obviously been super instrumental in terms of creating brand awareness for us in a really kind of flooded landscape of big brands. So yeah, the cinematic series, we've been running it for about, I think, 5 seasons now, more or less. And it's, yeah, we do these very high quality shorts that ski shorts. And yeah, they've been a huge piece, especially, you know, when we're a huge piece in terms of creating brand awareness. That's just the beginning, you know, to get the DPS name out there and logo. And then once you go down that sales funnel, we obviously have to complement it with, you know, more technical and product specific marketing. But at the top of that funnel, in terms of getting the name out there, especially in, you know, markets like Japan or the whole European continent, it's been a really valuable tool.
Well, I want to talk about this for a minute because, you know, content marketing has been beat to death, and people, you know, oftentimes when you really look at especially larger organizations' implementation of content marketing, it's like, yeah, make sure the 21-year-old intern has put enough Facebook posts up. right?
Yeah.
And there really so often is a missing of the mark on quality. And mm-hmm. yet you look at folks like Red Bull or what Bloomberg has done or the Lego movie or, you know, these organizations out there. I mean, like there's a document you can get a hold of online. I think it's from 1952 about Disney. And it's like basically a product roadmap of all the different things they offered that all led back to how the films were going to support the park that was going to support the sales of all the toys. And it was like, instead of competing with like content marketers, they're competing with the real media, you know?
Right.
And can you talk about this idea of, you know, not just content marketing, but stuff that is like literally getting you into film festivals quality?
Yeah. In what sense? Like just,
well, just the idea of like not just putting out content to put out content, but really right. like applying that quality lens to it and having the discipline to not just measure how much content we put out, but to measure, you know, is this media quality content?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it goes back to the roots of the brand. If you go back, you know, to our mission statement and the search for perfection I think like probably, you know, probably happens in almost every company, you know, there's this internal debate as to, you know, quality versus quantity and does it match the ethos of the brand? And that's something we've always tried to do. You know, it's like if it doesn't match the standard that we're trying to build or chasing in our product, then it's not worth doing or touching, really. We've always lived by that. I always say, like, whether I don't know if it's right or wrong, but I always feel like, you know, you can, on YouTube, you can get, you know, you can have some ski clip that's, you know, super radical or whatever, and it gets, you know, 20 seconds and it gets a few million eyeballs, let's just say, versus maybe a, you know, beautiful film festival piece that, you know, that gets, maybe a tenth of those views or less. But, you know, it seems like I'm no, social media expert, but, you know, I'd rather have the tenth of eyeballs on that high quality piece that really, stir someone's soul and live with them for, you know, potentially for years to come than some high volume hit that just comes and goes and there's another one tomorrow, if you know what I mean. So from a brand perspective, it's really about quality and just sort of lining up with the, you know, the culture of the brand and the product offering and creating a lasting connection to the customer. It's not so much marketing strategy, it's just kind of a core ethos, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you guys are, you know, by definition, an innovative organization. Everything that you're doing, the Phantom, the shapes, the materials, all this stuff. When you think about leading an innovative organization, like, I'm sure just being in the industry, there's a number of folks that want to be associated just because it's fun and it's cool. But you actually have to have stuff work. You actually have to get customers to buy this and then not just to order it, but to pay their bills. You know, like, there's all the less glamorous parts of an innovative organization. Can you talk about any of your experience on that, because you had a professional skiing background originally, right?
Yep.
Can you talk about any of the kind of like drive and determination from that that's translated, and then just your thoughts on leading an innovative organization in general?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess as a skier, and this goes to the roots of the mission again, you know, personally, I just was obsessed with like how I could further my own craft and ski, you know, not necessarily to, you know, to get a claim or some accolade or something. It's just really a very personal mission about like developing the art of your own skiing, like how you, and this is what led to the, you know, a lot of these products too, is like, you know, how deep can you take this to match reality with what you imagine in your own mind in terms of like the style, the power, the flow of skiing. So I think that that kind of constant drive to try to match an imperfect world that never totally sees perfection with this perfect idea that you chase is really what creates that kind of tension to continually improve and think outside the box and make things better. And that's not something that, you know, I feel like you either have it or you don't in a way. And it's just kind of like somehow in my DNA or blood. I'm just very curious to try to push things farther and farther towards perfection. And I think that's the main driver. But as you alluded to, you're dealing with imperfect parts all the time in the practical application of that mission. So in terms of like an organization, yeah, I mean, things are, you know, there's financial realities, there's the people management side of it. There's the,
can we talk about that for a minute? Let's talk about the people side. You know, everybody wants to have a great place to work, but there's always stress and there's always deadlines and there's always complaining customers and there's always bills to be paid. And can you talk about your approach of like whether it's things you did wrong before that are better now or just any of your philosophies in general about the people side of having a great team?
Yeah, totally. And I'll say straight off the bat, I'm definitely not probably the most talented manager of people that ever entered the business world. But, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, myself included, you get inspired by this idea, you know, of not sitting on your laurels and continually pushing things forward. So I think at the core, that's what really can motivate and inspire people to work on projects that, you know, even myself, I probably, you know, from just a sheer monetary standpoint, we've always joked, you know, I could probably make more in another industry with another career, you know, many decades ago, but that wouldn't feed the soul the way this does. And I think as a team, you know, like naturally as things weed out and people just kind of naturally magnetically get attracted to a team, it's because there's this shared passion for the product, for the ideal, for the culture. And so I think that at least in our case has happened somewhat organically, in terms of creating a team. You know, it's we're not building toaster ovens. So it's, you know, you naturally sort of attract very passionate people that want to kind of push the envelope, which is really cool. And makes the culture pretty dynamic. And yeah, like I mentioned, there's sacrifice within that too. You know, we're a fledgling, you know, we're always kind of, we're always searching for air at the top. We're like another analogy. Yeah. We're like a volcano. We're trying to do new stuff all the time and always searching for sustainability. And, you know, we're by no means, kind of made it as an organization. So there's always these things in terms of HR, places to work, that, you know, compared to much bigger competitors, we're always kind of lacking or can't provide everything we'd like to. But on the other hand, like that energy and that thrust of like doing something really cool and innovative is enough fuel to really get people psyched and into it.
Yeah, I love it. Let's take a quick break from the sponsor, and I got some more questions for you.
Sounds good.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so one of the things I wanted to ask, you know, you're talking about how you have this big advantage of what you're doing is so cool that it attracts a certain individual and you've got the passion and this kind of thing. But anytime you get humans together, there's conflict or friction. Any advice about conflict management or conflict resolution in an innovative organization inventing the future of an industry?
Let's see. I mean, generally, you know, it's like, how to answer this, but in my experience, it's kind of like common sense kind of rules in a sense. And you know, if everyone's on the same mission, there's usually a middle path that makes sense. And I think, you know, generally when it comes to conflict, you know, within a team, it's, you know, just generally just hearing people out and coming, bringing everyone back, if you can, to that middle ground, to me seems, seems to generally kind of work and right itself. I don't know if that's specific enough, but keeping cool and listening to people and just trying to work through conflict to, if you have passionate people that at their core believe in the mission, it usually comes right pretty quickly. And usually that tension is just created from, from stress of things not going as quickly as one would like, or that's generally at the core of it. But I think in our organization, it's not, culturally everyone's relatively aligned, so the issues aren't much deeper than that, I would say, generally.
Yeah. It's amazing, as leaders, when somebody else is hot under the collar, what a temptation it is to match them. But I know the advice sounds simple, but I kind of love your idea of like, stay cool, listen to them, that's going to de-escalate, and then bring it back to the mission. What's the constancy of purpose? What's the rallying cry we're all here for? And
yeah,
I mean, what I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm putting too many words in your mouth, is it's like, if it's less about me versus you and it's more about what's right for the mission, then the middle ground can be found. Is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like, if ego is a big deal, like generally those folks kind of get weeded out of the equation eventually, naturally. It's the mission first and just the desire to have this, fun new ideas succeed commercially too is the ultimate validation of them. And if everyone starts with that idea and just being a part of it, as long as, things stay calm, reasonable, common sense, I think usually you end up in a good place and things aren't too big a deal.
Yeah. So taking a bit of a right turn here, one of the subjects that's near and dear to my heart is the backcountry space of action sports. I don't know if this is just wishful thinking on my part, but I'd be interested in your thought. I've got such a passion for snowmobile up, snowboard down stuff, and our skier buddies come with us sometimes. And I really feel like, and again, this could be just selective editing, but it seems like there's more and more a move away from the terrain parks into like authentically awesome deep powder backcountry, whether that's skins, whether that's snowmobile access. Do you think that's wishful thinking on my part, or do you see it as well?
I see it too. And, I guess I've always been in a bubble that I've always seen it that way. In other words, let's call it a few years ago and then going 10 years before that, freestyle and park, at least on the ski side. Was kind of the thing or the fad, but it was, I don't think once ever in my, I've personally never been super interested in that side of the sport, and just knowing how powerful the deep powder kind of big mountain experience is, and have always recognized that as sort of like, just the tip of the spear of the sport. Right. And I think, and that's skiing. And so we've always held true to those values and really what we believed in. We never really kind of been swayed or distracted by a park movement. It's nothing we've ever dabbled in, because it's not our core. It's not our mission. And I think, it's, if you, in snowboarding too, you kind of see it now, it's almost being validated. If you look at, maybe it's just because I have more exposure to this part of the world, but it seems like, freestyle has kind of waned a little bit, and you see brands like Jones, having a lot of energy and power now in the snowboarding world.
It is interesting, right? Compared to the Forum jibbing world, right? When the Jones brand is not like an afterthought, when it's a front runner, right? At least on people's lips, it's definitely an indication, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And it's just, it's something that I feel like I know in my heart, and others do too. You can have fads and trends and stuff, but riding a steep spine or a deep powder field, like that, it's just that's the apex of snow sports, and there isn't like more passionate kind of deeper experience in snow sports, I feel like. So So, yeah.
Along the same lines, you know, before we started the interview today, you said that you and your buddies have been talking about getting more into sled access. And that's a trend that I see coming back in a bigger way. Any thoughts behind what's driven that?
Well, I guess for me personally, there's a long history there. Like we spent many years driving up to Alaska every spring and trying to basically go heli skiing with our snowmobiles, you know, and we were arguably not that successful at it, but just the sense of adventure and just kind of the do it yourself in the backcountry it just brings us, you know, just amazing level of exploration to the whole experience, you know. And my approach to sled skiing now would probably be different than it was 10 years ago where we were just set on kind of like making it a helicopter, whereas now I would use it more as a straight access tool and then climb and tour mostly. But just the freedom that it gives you for long approaches, or like, for example, like where we used to go in Alaska, you know, like in an hour, you could get very deep into these zones that, you know, otherwise would only be accessed by plane or many, many days of touring to get into. So just the sheer access component of what the sled allows you to do is pretty incredible.
Yeah, I love it. Well, everybody, check out dpsskis.com. And Stefan, thanks for making all the time for us.
Much appreciated. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to come on and spew and talk. So I appreciate it.
That's awesome. Well, that's it for the episode. One other thing I wanted to tell you about. If you remember the guys from Convoy in episodes back, Ken Free and Trent Mano, I went on one of their CEO trips to New York and I met a guy named Brent Thompson, very successful entrepreneur. He was former CEO of Jive Communications, big company now, I think $300 or $400 million. Anyways, he started a new company called blipbillboards.com. I'm super stoked they're a sponsor now. But I remember a year and some ago when I met him, I thought it was genius. Instead of having to buy 6 months or a year's worth of billboard for thousands of dollars, you can buy 8 seconds at a time for like 10 or 20 cents. You pick what billboard you want it on, what time of day you want it to run. And it just puts so much power in the hands of marketers and CEOs who want to try something and see if it works. You can buy as many or as few as you want, change it as many times as you want. I think now our podcast is being advertised on billboards in like 18 different states because we have these guys as sponsors. We're pretty excited about it. Hope you check out blipbillboards.com. Thanks.